Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, oh, hey, nah.
Out there. This is Peter Rowe, and we're here with the Human Design Show, brought to you by loveyourhumandesign.com. And the reason I titled my website that, loveyourhumandesign.com, is because, partly because I'm the vessel of love, but partly because I really feel like if you know your design, if you know your human design, then that gives you a great basis and groundwork for understanding yourself, understanding what you were designed with, and understanding strategy around how you can use your design to best benefit your life and to best get you in the flow. Today we have a show that we're going to talk about the profiles, the 2-5 and the 5-2, sort of inverse profiles there, but since profiles are made up of two aspects of lines, and we'll talk more about that. But since they're both made up of the same lines, just in a different orientation, we put them together, and we're going to talk about the 2-5 and the 5-2 profiles. And profiles are really personality attributes that people express. But before we go much further, I want to bring my co-host, Reverend Rick, on the line. Reverend Rick, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Pleasure to be here.
And I will point out, if you haven't heard some of the other shows, Reverend Rick is a 5-1 profile, so he is going to offer us the expertise and the point of view of that fifth line, the elusive fifth line. And I wrote a little blog post, and I like having a little fun with my blog posts and entitling them. And so if you happen to be at a computer, you may want to go out to my website and go to that blog post, just because we're going to also be looking at some charts today on there. So go to loveyourhumandesign.com, and on the right-hand side, about a third of the way down or so, there's Peter's blogs, and click on that, and then you'll get a list of articles, and if you're listening today, that should be up at the top. And the article is titled Profile 5-2 and 2-5, Is This Illusion or Seclusion? And Rick, just to start things off, I'd like to get your comment on that, the illusion and the seclusion.
I actually love it. And the other thing that came to mind was perception or personality. And because it's so, that seclusion and or illusion is so, if you had to sum up the fifth line and the second line in one word, those are the two perfect words to do it. Just in terms of how they interact, you know, both of them being, of course, projected energies. So I love the way you have fun with these little posts.
and you know, it's interesting that you say that too. The perception, and it makes me think back to when we were first learning about human design, and we go through the lines, and we'll talk, Rick and I are going to go through the six lines just to give you an orientation point in just a minute. But I have to say, when we went through the six lines, the 2 was probably one of the easiest to understand for me, and the 5 was probably the most difficult. And so it's interesting you talk about that perception. You know, it's in the energy, as we get into it, we're going to talk about the energy here of the vortex or the projection is reversed. And I'm curious to see how, did you have that same experience about the 2 and the 5?
Actually, yes and no. Because I am a fifth line, our discussion about the fifth line really hit home with me. It really was very clear. As far as my understanding of the fifth line was. But my ability to discuss the fifth line, well, that was quite nebulous. You know, it's taken me quite some time to be able to formulate the right words to really talk about the fifth line and what it really means to be a fifth line. And I think the reason for that is because it's easy to understand how it applies to me. It's a little harder to describe that to others. And as we talk about the energy of the fifth line, I think it's going to become apparent why that is. You know, the fifth line's really, there's an elusive element to them. And, you know, discussing it openly with other people kind of shines light on that. And that's not always comfortable for a fifth line.
Exactly. And it is elusive, that fifth line. And it's taken me, I think it's actually just been through these series of profiles, these radio shows that we've been doing on profiles, that I've really gotten more comfortable with the fifth line and understanding it. So I hope you listeners out there get something out of this and get a deeper understanding, especially if you're a 2-5, because I think it will help you figure out that there are events that are going to happen in your life based on your profile, based on your personality. And people may make judgments. People may treat you in a certain way. People may call you out, and you feel like you need to be alone, and you turn them down, and so they may project onto you that, oh, you don't want to be my friend. So there's all this projection and potential judgment, or not. It doesn't have to be as strong as judgment, but it could be categorizing you. That's not personal. It's just part of the energy, and it's part of this projected energy. And people trying to understand you, and I would have to say that a fifth line person is probably the most difficult to understand. It takes time, essentially. It takes time to really get to a deeper understanding of the fifth line person.
It really does, and not even more so than taking time, it takes patience. Because a fifth-line person is not going to be secretive and elusive on purpose. It's just they don't necessarily feel the need to share every aspect of themselves all the time, if that makes any sense.
It does. So let's back up. We're talking about human design here. And if you're a new listener, at the highest level, there's type. And there's five different types in the human design system. There's manifesting generators and generators, which are about 70% of the population. There are projectors, which are around 21-22%. There are manifestors, which are about 8%. And there are reflectors, which are about 1%. Below that level, and type is really important. If you haven't learned about type, there's audios on all the types except the manifesting generator and reflector, but we have those coming up shortly for you in the next 3 or 4 weeks. But learn your type and your strategy, because that is really the entry point to living your human design, is to learn your type and strategy. And then I'd say probably below that is understanding your profile, because your profile is the personality. That the personality or the personality flavoring that you're going to put on your design, on your expression in life. And the profiles are made up of 6 lines. Again, this is coming out of the Chinese I Ching. And there are 64 gates in the Chinese I Ching. And each gate is broken down into 6 lines. And so Ricardo and I are going to walk through those. Ricardo, you want to take line 1 here?
Sure. Line 1 has an inward focus, meaning it's not selfish, but it is focused on me. You know, how does this affect me? And it tends to be a very curious and investigative type of energy that wants to know, okay, if I engage in this activity, how is that going to impact me? How is it going to impact my life? And it also has a very foundational element to it. It is the base, if you would, of the entire, what we call the lower trigram, lines 1, 2, and 3. It is the foundation for all of those. And building that foundation is very important. For a first-line person, they really need to have a sense of security in that the foundation below them is solid, and they won't, you know, they can put their foot on it and know that it's going to be something solid to stand on and build off of.
And line two, again, is still in that lower trigram, so it has an inward focus. It's not as inwardly focused as line one. It tends to be a social. And line two has a unique need that its experiences and its in learning things, a person with a line two profile, they need alone time to integrate that information. And so the line two is called, has been dubbed the hermit by Ra Uruhu, the creator or the person that brought human design forward. So line two can sometimes need their alone time, but it's also, it has a social pull, and so people call out the line two to come out and play.
And rounding up the top of the lower trigram, line three is all about having the experience. It's all about getting out there and experimenting with different things, different thoughts, different physical realities, different activities to get involved in. It's all about being able to experience something. And even though it's got an inward focus in terms of, you know, still looking at things and how they affect me, line three is the one that's really looking out and saying, you know what, there's a whole world of people out there that I can interact with too. And so these experiences that the line three has are really meant for sharing with others. But it is very, very much it's known as the martyr. And generally it's known as the martyr because these are the people that, in order to truly, truly, truly know and understand their environments, they need to experience their environments. And so many times those experiences are not necessarily the easy way. You know, we as human beings, we learn a whole lot more from our mistakes than we do from doing things right the first time. So these are the people that tend to do the most learning that way. And the rest of us get to benefit from their insights and their experiences. So they have those experiences in order to share those with others.
And then we move to the upper trigram with line four. And the upper trigrams, lines four, five, and six. And now these lines in the upper trigram have an outward orientation. In a way, they're more interested in what others are doing and then utilizing that information or that experience or that knowledge to be drawn back to the fourth line person for understanding. So a fourth line is foundational, similar to the first line, but the fourth line, the foundation tends to be about major things, about friends, about family, about their home, about their job. So all those things tend to be not necessarily individual things, but the outer things that bring foundation to the fourth line's world. Fourth lines tend to be very social. They're called the opportunist, and the opportunity for the fourth line comes through their network, the people that they know.
And then moving on to the fifth line is a projected energy like the second line, and it's also wanting to build on that foundation of the fourth line and wanting to share its knowledge and its information. But again, it has that quality of not necessarily it's got that quality of a bit of downtime or a bit of reclusiveness, a bit of I don't need to show everything all at once. I can just show this aspect of myself to others because this is what's appropriate in the moment. And therefore, there's a potential for this perception to develop in others and be projected onto that fifth line person So even though the fifth line person has an outward look, an outward focus, the people in the environment tend to have a projection that goes inward towards that person, towards that fifth line. And the fifth line is known as the heretic because sometimes at some inopportune moments they end up showing another aspect of themselves. Another layer of that onion is peeled away, and suddenly people realize, wow, you're not the one I thought you were at all. So I tend to like that aspect of the heretic, actually. The fifth line actually also is a very, we'll put it this way, it's a very mature expression, energetic expression. The fifth line innately understands what needs to be shared at that time, and that's why they project that kind of, or why they put out that kind of vibe, if you will, and why people tend to latch on to that. It's what's needed at the time, at the moment. It's a very mature expression of the energy, and it's a very universalizing type of energy. But as Peter said earlier, it's very much a layered type of energy, and you got to really take time to peel away the layers before you really truly get to know a fifth line person.
And then rounding out the field is the sixth line. And the sixth line is the only line in the hexagrams that has a different life stage. So the sixth line for the first 28 years acts like a third line and is very experimental and is out there trying to experience, trying to do that experiment, and it takes the results of those experiences and experiments in an inwardly focused, how did that affect me? At about 28, the sixth line realizes this isn't working. And the sixth line does what is called going up on the roof, and it takes a step back from life. Sixth lines a lot of times become a little bit more aloof, not totally aloof, but they're just more removed, less engaged. And the sixth line turns its focus from that inward view to an outward view. It starts to basically look at other people. What are they doing? How do those experiments, those experiences affect them? What can I garner from that and draw back to myself as wisdom? And ultimately, by age 50 or so, from the sixth line's experience as an experimenter and experiencer of the first 28 years, and the sixth line's observational mode of the 22 years between 28 and 50, the sixth line comes off the roof and steps into what's called the role model phase. And the sixth line at that point will act like a role model, and when it's needed, the sixth line will step forward to help out. When it's needed and when it's beneficial for that sixth line, they will help out and provide the wisdom or the knowledge or the skills, whatever is being needed. So those are the six lines. Today we're going to focus on the two and the five. Ricardo, let's start off with the five just take a little bit deeper look at the fifth line and what it's all about.
All right. And actually, I want to go back to your blog post and mention that I think you did such a wonderful job of describing the fifth line and the second line projections. And what I want to focus on there is what I mentioned a little earlier. They're both projected energies. The fifth line has an outward focus from the individual who has that fifth line, but the projection is an inward projection from others. So it's the energy that's coming, the perception is coming from outside of the individual, being brought to that individual. In other words, other people are creating the identity for that fifth line profile. Meanwhile, the fifth line has his or her own identity that may or may not match the perception that's being put out there, or the perception that's being projected onto that fifth line person. And
it's just the way you've written it up is just such a beautiful way of saying that, you know what, there's an interaction, there's always an interaction that's taking place with second and fifth line people, and it's an interaction that goes from the inside to the outside, from the outside to the inside. There is no getting away from it. There is no way for people to be islands. You know, we literally are meant to deal with others. But how we deal with others and how we recognize others is really what happens with the fifth line. And the fifth line is much more so the kind of person that, you know, you may know somebody at work, and they may be a brilliant scientist. But until you get to know them outside of work, you won't really know that they have this creative streak in them, and they love to write children's stories that are all full of fantasy and magic and mystery. You know, those kinds of things. And it's, like you said, it's just, it's such a layered identity that only the layers that are needed in the moment are the layers that are shown. And so you need to spend more time with these fifth line people in order to see the other layers and be able to peel away all of that and really get to see the big picture. Fifth line people are like jigsaw puzzles. You put one piece down at a time, and after a while, you finally get to see the big picture. But until you get that last piece in place, you won't really know them for certain. You'll only know certain aspects or certain sections of them. Does that make sense?
It does, and one of the things you said earlier when we were going through the lines 1 through 6, you were talking about the fifth line, and the fifth line energy is mature, and it has this maturity, it has this depth, it has this complexity. I was thinking of a well-aged wine, actually, that has like all these subtleties of flavor, and you know, part of where the projection comes in potential judgment and misunderstanding is that fifth line, with its wisdom, with its complexity, is calling the shots, is making the decisions of what to express in the moment out of all those subtle flavors, if you will, using the wine analogy. So out of all those subtle flavors, it's making that choice. They're making that choice. And if you're another involved with them in the moment, that might not have been the choice that you would make. Or you might make the assumption that what they expressed was the whole flavor of the wine, not just one little aspect. And so as you get to know the fifth line person more in a deeper way, you're going to find out that was just the tip of the iceberg. That there's a lot more, and you can't. It also reminds me of that story about the blind mice and the elephant, and each one is on a different part of the elephant, and the one that's on the trunk thinks that it's a snake, and the one that's on the tail thinks that it's a rope, and so on, and so there's all these perceptions of what the elephant is. And it's only when the seven blind mice all get together that they realize that they have an elephant that they're trying to figure out what it is. And in a way, that's like the fifth blind person, that they're that they're this complex personality that you're only going to get to know as you have different experiences with them.
That's right. Slightly different from the second line profile, whose projection is more of an outward projection and an inward focus. You want to take that one, Peter?
Sure. The second line, you know, it's really known as the hermit. And I think second lines are a little bit easier to identify, because these are the people, if you have a group of friends, these are the people, they're going to be pretty social. But they are going to either tend to, you know, say you have a group that after work or after school tend to hang out. These people will hang out some of the time, but they'll tend to want to go home and, you know, be at home, have some alone time. And your friends will tend to call this person out You know, it's like, oh, we're going to go to the movies tonight. You know, come out with us. And the second line person will often accept that invitation, but if they really know themselves, they will at times turn that down because they have the built-in meter that says, I haven't had enough alone time. And I have a son that is, he behaves exactly like that. Before I knew human design, he had that exact behavior with his friends. His preference would be to come home and go in his room and be alone. But if his friends called him, he would go out to a certain point when he would just say, you know, no, I don't really feel like going out tonight. And, you know, he'd spend that time in his room alone. And I would say the difference between the second line and the fifth line, that one that stands out is this, the direction of the projection. And the fifth line, because it has that inward projection, tends to draw us to them. The second line tends to draw us to call them to us, to call them out. So I don't know if I'm making that difference clear, but it's I see it as just two different ways that projective interaction is working.
Yeah, and it's like you said, Peter. It's the projection works in different directions for each line, but the end result is still the same. The individual is being called out to interact with others. And that's the important thing, because in both of these lines, there is a level of wisdom that is meant to be shared with others. And I think one of the big differences in the way these energies get expressed is in how it shows up in a person's profile. Now, we're talking about second line and fifth line, but there's really two profiles that are affected by this. One is the 5-2, and the other is the 2-5. The first number in the profile represents our conscious awareness of our energy. It represents the personality, what we generally recognize as our personality. The second line, the second number in the profile, represents more an innocent expression of a recurring energetic theme. Our profiles really are recurring energetic themes in our lives. It is how we recognize our own energy, i.e. the personality, and it's also how we innocently respond to different things, and that would be the design number. I don't want to necessarily say unconscious or subconscious, although that's how it's referred to very often, because once somebody calls attention to it, you can be very aware of that kind of energy, your design energy. And it's no longer subconscious or unconscious. So, you know, I like to refer to it more as the innocent expression that unless somebody really brings it to our attention, we may not be aware of it.
And to give our listeners a simple example, because, you know, sometimes I think that helps more concrete. One of the gates, we'll take gate one, because I think it's a good gate that you can look at. Let's take gate seven. I was thinking seven, but said one. Let's take gate seven, which is the gate of the leader. It's off the identity center if you have your chart on the left-hand side. And so it's the gate of the leader. And if you have a person that has gate seven, and we're really simplifying here, but I think it's a good example. If you have a person that's gate seven and they have, for example, a first-line profile, versus somebody that has a second line profile, the person that has gate seven with a second line profile is probably more likely to become a leader in a group by being invited out, by being called out. You know, hey, Ricardo, you know, you were a teacher. You know a lot about what we're talking about. Why don't you lead this group? That kind of thing. As opposed to somebody that's a first line, or Ricardo actually is a fifth line, So I think Ricardo's expression of that leadership gait would be more like, instead of saying, Ricardo, come out and lead us, we would just sort of naturally be drawn to Ricardo and say, you know, hey, you know a lot here. Can you lead us, lead our group? So I don't know if you understand the subtlety of the difference there, but it's how that profile is going to express the other elements in your design.
Well, and actually, if you don't mind, Peter, I'd like to expand on that.
Yeah.
On that example. And I want to use the keynotes that are actually associated with the second line and the fifth line in that gate. The second line is known as the Democrat, and it is the ability to lead in a group, but it's with the group's permission, basically. It's the when that second line is, as you said, invited to lead, it's leading by serving the will of the majority. You know, it's serving the will of the group. Whereas, now that's one type of leadership, but the fifth line, and we talked about the fifth line being a mature type of energy, the fifth line, the keynote there is known as the general. And the reason it's called the general is because this is a type of leadership that takes over in times of crisis. This is a type of leadership that says, I know what to do, we're going to do this. And it doesn't wait to be invited to be the leader, it takes over and becomes the authority. But it's because it knows what's necessary at the moment. It knows what's necessary in that situation. And then after that situation's over, it may change. It may now change to another aspect of that fifth line. You know, an aspect where the general is now satisfied that the situation is under control and is now awaiting orders from higher up, kind of thing. But it's always relevant to the situation. And I hope that makes it a little clearer as to, you know, either the being called out or, you know, the mature expression. Even the general has that interaction with others, but it's more so not so much being called out, but it's a bit more of giving a perception of the individual. I don't know if I was any clearer or not.
Yeah, no, I think you were, and I think that's a good example. So what we're trying to do is give you a flavor that, okay, that's one gate, and how the profile would affect your expression for that one gate. And, you know, Ricardo, now that you brought up the Democrats, we've had donkeys, and I brought up elephants, so I think we've got it all covered. Unless somebody wants to bring up something about tea or something, I don't know. But
this is going to be such a political show today, huh?
Yeah, I didn't know that when we got up this morning. Well, from here, what I'd like to do is I'd like to bring on Rosemary. She volunteered to have us take a look at her chart, and she's been waiting patiently. Rosemary, are you on the line now?
Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. So, Rosemary, we've been talking about the 2-5 and the 5-2, both aspects of the profile, and you happen to be a 5-2 profile. And again, if people have joined us, we're looking at an blog post and a chart on loveyourhumandesign.com. And if on the right-hand side you click on Peter's Blogs and then click on Profiles 5-2 and 2-5. And down near the halfway down, if you scroll down, we have Rosemary's chart. And Rosemary, you're a 5-2. How has what Ricardo and I have been talking about resonated with you?
Yeah, it definitely resonates with me. I really do see the frequency with which I have to be the one called out to do something. And I'm far less likely to be the organizer of, say, social events. But as you said, frequently want to participate and then will know when it's no, I need to be by myself and regenerate. So I really could resonate with that. I can see the layers of the fifth line too. I've had people say to me before that, especially when I was younger, that I wasn't really easy to get to know. And I think I'm a lot more open now that I'm older. But yes, you do have to take time to get to know me, and I do have aspects that aren't as apparent in the beginning. So I can really relate to what you've been describing.
And Ricardo, I'm curious, do you think that part of that fifth line gains wisdom through life experience? So as she described, it was a little bit harder to get to know her when she was younger, and now it's she feels like it's easier for people to get to know her. Do you think that fifth line gains a degree of wisdom of what to express at what times, becomes more sophisticated maybe?
I think it does, and I really think that the combination of the fifth line and the second line, over time, you know, the fifth line and the second line learn to, you know, the person learns to integrate those two energies into one's conscious life. And the reason I say that is it's easy for someone to stand back, but the wisdom that's gained, the wisdom of recognizing that, hey, if I take enough, I'll really understand what's in my head, and I'll be better able to share it with others, and then people will ask me for it. So there's a kind of that projection that goes outward is energy that says, hey, I know what I'm talking about now. The projection that goes inward is projection that says, hey, you really seem like you know what you're talking about. I want to know more. So I think the wisdom that's acquired through life is a wisdom that really learns to integrate those two aspects of projections really, really well. And I just want to say, Rosemary, your the top two gates you have active in your chart on both sides, 58, 52, and then on the other side, 821.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, Ricardo.
The top four gates that you have in your chart?
Uh-huh.
The 48 and 58 at the top, and then the 21 and 52?
Okay.
I just want to say I have those exact same four gates. You and I are the same incarnation cross.
Oh, cool.
I don't have them in the same order, but believe me, I can relate to the energy of it.
So, Ricardo, do you want to give her a brief rundown of her design and give her a brief reading?
Okay. Want me to do the open centers or the defined centers?
Whatever you like.
Okay. I'll go with the open centers this time. I'll let you do the defined centers. And the open centers, Rosemary, you have, can you hear me okay?
Yes, great.
Okay, good. You have an open head, ajna, throat, will, and solar plexus. Right? The head and the ajna together are what we call the mind, and they represent thoughts and inspirations and specific processes. The head is also a pressure center, so there's going to be some pressure there to know what you know, basically, and to be able to organize that information and act on it or communicate it. You've got that gate 43 off the ajna, which is pointing towards the throat, and it's basically focusing the energy that would flow through the ajna towards the throat. But with an open throat, you're a little limited in what you can actually say and be heard. Now, you do have a lot of potential connections to the throat, so depending on where you are and who you're around, you'll either be heard or you won't. The best thing to do with that is to wait for recognition before speaking, in which case whatever you say is going to be of value to the people that hear it. The open will center and the open solar plexus, the will center, of course, is, you know, ego. It's willpower. It's the heart. It's also known as the heart center. It's a motorized energy that allows you to push through whatever it is you think you need to push through, and it allows you, to really keep on going even when you feel like you may not have the energy to keep on going. As a generator, you're designed to actually use up your energy at the end of the day. Your open will center there may actually help you
keep pushing until you get a second wind or even a third wind, depending on what it is you need to get through. Your open solar plexus is the seat of emotion, which means you are a true empath. You feel the emotional energy from others, and you have the ability to truly get to know people on a very deep level and know what they're experiencing. So taking all of these aspects together, I'd say there's a pressure to know and to be certain about certain things. There's a pressure to really prove that you can be that you can know the truth of somebody's emotional state, as well as a pressure to seek out attention, sometimes in not so appropriate ways. Now, I would say that's probably all more so true of early life than later life. And the one caveat I would have with all of that is because that solar plexus is so open, I would say learn to identify. There's a phrase that our Peters and my teacher, Karen Curry, used that I think is so wonderful. She would say, learn to be a screen and not a sponge. The open centers are there for us to take in energy from others, but not hold on to it. Allow it to pass through, recognize it, learn from it, know that it belongs to someone else, and then let it pass on through so that we can develop our internal wisdom from all of that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes very good sense. Thank you.
Welcome.
And Rosemary, how do you feel like you've done with managing other people's emotions, other people's influences?
Definitely have been more of a sponge than a screen at many times, and I still have to be really cautious of that because I do pick it up so well.
And do you have any methods that you found to deal with that?
Lately, I have been more just doing some energy releases after I work with people, or being just quietly in my mind recognizing, okay, now I'm separating from that person, and whatever I was picking up on belongs with her and is leaving with her, kind of thing. I actually had an experience last week where I picked up on someone's sadness so deeply I couldn't keep on doing what I was doing until I really stopped and sent that energy back with her because she had left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I definitely relate to what you're saying.
Good. And some other things that I've had people say that work is if you can use visualization of some kind of protective cloak, suit of armor.
Mm-hmm.
Crystals are a great thing that if you do close work with people, then whether you can wear them on your wrist or around your neck, or even on your desk if you do that kind of work,
mm-hmm.
and help prevent that absorption or that sponge type effect.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing that I would also recommend is the Hindu chakra system is one of the foundational elements to human design, and in the chakras, emotions are carried in water, or the emotional energy is related to water.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're somebody who, you're picking up that energy, very strongly from, and the open centers do that anyway. They take in that energy, but in an amplified format, so that you really get the ability to truly deeply know and feel that kind of energy. But one of the things specifically for emotional energy that you can do to release it is take your hands and just either wash your hands or just put them under running water.
Okay.
Turn on a faucet and let the water wash all that emotional energy away. Let
mm-hmm.
it flow out through your hands and away with the water.
Mm. Thank you.
So Ricardo talked about the undefined centers or the open centers. And so let's take a look at your defined centers. You have a defined root, a defined spleen, a defined sacral, and a defined identity center. And so starting with the sacral, this is what makes you a generator. Earlier in the show, I talked about the five different types. You're a generator, and you're overall strategy is to wait to respond, or really respond, be responding to those things that enter your reality that you're passionate about. So here's where it plays into the open center. With an open head and an open ajna, people with open heads and open ajnas are vulnerable to amplify and get excited about other people's ideas. And so for you, a potential challenge is that you get excited about those ideas, but then before you invest much of your sacral energy, make sure that it's an idea for you, that it's not just your friend coming over and they're so excited that you get excited and you make a physical commitment to help out on their project or go away for a workshop or whatever the idea is, that you don't make that commitment before you know that it comes back to your heart, that it comes back to your gut, that, you know, yes, this is something I am really passionate about. You have a defined spleen, so that is an aspect. The spleen is about knowing in the moment. It's that flash intuition that, yes, this is right for me. And so with a defined spleen, you're going to have more consistency of knowing in that moment, of knowing, yes, this is the right thing for me, or no, it's not. You have the gate 48 off of the spleen that goes up towards the throat. It's red and black stripe on the chart. And the gate 48 is about depth. It's about detail, or it's about breadth of information. So you're going to be driven to, for things that you're passionate about, you're going to be driven to find out a lot of information, or to find out, and it can be very specific. It can go very deep on a specific level, or it can just go very broad, that you want to kind of know everything about a subject that you might be passionate about. You have two channels from the spleen to the root, or from the root to the spleen. These are going to power your immune system. And these channels are about, the middle channel is about fighting through struggle. When something is a struggle, what ultimately we're trying to do is to get a deeper understanding of it. And since you have the whole channel, you have the gate of struggle, which is gate 28, but you also have the gate 38, which is to fight through that struggle. And so with that channel, what that brings you is a consistency to move through things that might be a struggle to understand or a struggle to do, and move through them to a point of deeper understanding. You also have the channel above that. And my eyes need it a little bit bigger here. The
3254.
This is a channel of duration, and this is a channel of making change or moving through change when change is worthy. A lot of times this channel is associated with, or the way I think of this channel is that it's not the bleeding edge. It's not the person that ran out and bought an iPad in the last couple weeks since they came out. It's the person that's going to watch and see if people really like it, people see that it's useful, and then at that point make that change or start doing that activity. You have a defined identity center, and it's defined from the sacral in the channel of rhythm. And the channel of rhythm is kind of interesting. A lot of these gates have a relationship. You could call it a yin-yang. It's not necessarily masculine-feminine in that respect, but there has a balance. Like we were talking about the channel of struggle, we've got the gate 28, which is struggle, and we've got the 38, which is to fight struggle. In the channel of rhythm, we actually have a couple of energies that are not always harmonious. There's only about three channels that have this lack of harmony in them. And it's a channel of rhythm. The gate five is rhythm, is to have rhythmic style in your life, is to, you know, and this may show up as always getting up at 6 a.m., always having breakfast at 8 a.m., or always having the same thing for breakfast, always going for a run at 1 in the afternoon, these types of rhythmic cycles. The gate 15, on the other hand, is extreme. It's the gate of extremes, and it's extreme in rhythm. So people that just have this gate will have an extreme in rhythm. They may get up at 6 a.m. for 2 years and then suddenly need to change that. Or they may go for a run of 5 miles one day, and then the next day they go for a half mile. That there are these swings in the rhythm of their life. And so you having the whole channel, you may find that you're one or the other, that you have rhythm for a while, and then that you don't, that you have this, or what the rhythm that you have is more variant, is more extreme. And so with a defined identity center, you have a consistent knowingness of who you are, and it's not just that you're Rosemary, it's on a deeper level. It's really, I see the identity center as sort of the porthole or the vortex to your soul. And that expression, you're going to have a consistent access to that. Ricardo, anything you want to add?
Just that the with the channel of rhythm there, the 15-5, that is a directional type of energy in that the rhythm is a natural rhythm, but you may end up having to go through extremes to find that natural rhythm. And once you do, that sacral energy will empower that rhythm so that it's always the appropriate one for you. And in that sense, it will help keep you on the path that you're choosing to go on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, definitely. And I can really relate to that, the whole discussion about the rhythm. I am definitely somebody who has a really hard time staying in the same routine day to day.
I would say allow yourself to experiment with it. Your sacral response to the appropriate rhythm is going to come from, you know, experimenting with it and saying, well, okay, I'm going to try it this way today. Your sacral is just going to give you a nice little yummy feeling when you find the right one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be one that you can actually stick with.
Mm-hmm.
I would add that you look at rhythm beyond, you know, your rhythm might not look rhythmically to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That it might be that on Mondays you get up early, and on Tuesdays you sleep late, and
mm-hmm.
and so on. It might not be an army type, you know, 6 a.m. wake up call,
yep.
Lights out at 11, but it may be there in disguise, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that you're saying, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, because that's voice right there.
Yeah, this has been really incredible because it's a very, very clear and accurate description of me as a person.
And Ricardo, you have the same cross, but you'd like to add a few words about, you know, what those four lead gates. Rosemary, I don't know if you followed him. The four numbers are on the left-hand side of your chart up at the top with the Earth symbol, which is the circle with a dot, and the Sun symbol, which is the circle with the dot, and the Earth, which is a circle with the cross in it.
Okay.
And those are your incarnation cross, and the incarnation cross I see as sort of a cornerstone at life purpose. And since, Ricardo, you have those same four gates, do you want to comment on the significance of those gates?
Sure. Rosemary, do you know what your incarnation cross is?
I think it's right here.
Actually, yeah. Oh, I forgot. It is right there. Yeah, you can just scroll down and see it. It's called the Cross of Demands. Now, that, you know, sometimes terminology can be a little misleading. It doesn't necessarily mean that we are demanding people. The Cross of Demands is really all about holding authority accountable for taking action when an injustice is occurring. I think I hear you laughing.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, ever since I was a little kid, I used to love watching these old kung fu movies, you know, and in those old kung fu movies, there was always somebody that was getting beat up or, you know, somebody was getting taken advantage of in a negative way, either getting beat up or hurt or raped or whatever. And every time I saw something like that, my blood started to boil. I thought, somebody's got to do something about that. And of course,
mm-hmm.
drawn into the movie before somebody did. But it's very much that kind of energy. When you see something that requires interaction, the energy just wells up inside you that says, authority needs to do something here. Somebody's
yep.
got to do something. And if there's an authority figure, then we hold them accountable. We may actually go up to whoever the authority figure is, whether it's a police officer on the corner or the shop owner or maybe the manager of the movie theater when the kids are acting up in the theater or something. But we'll go to the authority figure and demand that they take action. When there's no authority figure around, that demand becomes a demand that we take over, that we take control, and we... Unfortunately, that doesn't happen a whole lot.
Right.
But that energy really is very much there. Resonate with you a lot?
Definitely, yes.
So you guys are posse people.
For what?
You're posse people. We got to get a posse. You know, the Old West. Go chase that guy down. And actually, I felt like that energy surfaced today. Ricardo, you were your voice was kind of fading, and Rosemary spoke up, sort of, you know, a minor injustice. She couldn't hear you because you were fading away, and I was about to say something, and it was Rosemary that spoke up and said, well, Ricardo, I can't hear you. It made that demand.
Yep.
You know, and so we talk about these energies, and sometimes we go for the exaggerated examples, but they're in here very subtly as well.
Yep, very much.
Well, Rosemary, we've got about 2 minutes left. Is there any question that you have about your design, anything we've talked about today that you'd like to ask?
I would love to understand a little bit more about the generator and how that plays out. And one of the experiences that I related to it was that, for example, if I decide I'm going to hold a workshop, I can design the workshop and then have nobody sign up for it, and then I'll experience that somebody will ask me for something and it'll be exactly what I've prepared. Is that a good understanding of it, aside from not responding to things unless they're in my immediate vicinity and I'm really passionate about them?
I would say it sounds like when you've had that experience where you've designed it and nobody's come, and then somebody asks you for it, you're close to the mark, but you're too soon.
Yes.
And things will typically work better. You'll have better attendance when somebody asks you, and then you design it.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's you're pretty much on the mark, but you might be a little bit too soon, and that's one of the reasons why Ra said wait to respond, because as generators we have this energy, and especially in our society we are conditioned to sort of push forward, and we might not have the timing right.
Well, and I would even go so far, Peter, as to say that Rosemary, if you go ahead and design it ahead of time, that's all fine and good, but don't necessarily advertise the workshop for it until somebody's asked you for it.
Oh, okay.
In which case, if the work for it is already done, then you can respond to them and say, you know, that's a great idea.
you want to help me advertise a workshop for this?
Okay.
You know, and you've got the work all done for it, and hopefully that person is either a manifestor, or if they're another generator, by asking them, do you want to help me market this, or do you want to help me advertise this? If that's a yes for them, then that's essentially giving them energetic permission to function as a manifestor and put it out there. They've
okay.
brought it to respond to and say, oh, wow, yeah, I do want to do that. You want to help me? And that person can turn around and respond and say, oh, yeah, I do. Let's tell people about it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, Rosemary, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
And Ricardo, once again, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
And that's it for today's show from loveyourhumandesign.com. Hope you had a good show, and we welcome you back next week. Be well. Blessed be.